Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2025. We begin our reading on the front page, large headline from the Gibson City Fire Protection District, Home a Total Lost. Early morning blaze destroy house, but family escapes. Gibson City. A Gibson City family lost their home and possessions in an early morning fire on Monday, January 20th, but all were able to escape the blazing structure. Bruce Kalal, chief of the Gibson City Fire Protection District, said about 40 firefighters from five volunteer fire departments responded to the fire at 503 North Lot Boulevard around 3:22 a.m. and arrived on scene 2 minutes later, fighting the blaze from inside and outside before it was eventually extinguished and the scene cleared around 10:32 a.m. The older two-story, Victorian-style home was a total loss, Kalal said. Fortunately, though, the family of five living there got out before firefighter arrived, transporting themselves to a local hospital with unknown injuries. The cause of the fire was unknown, but will be further investigated by the Office of the Illinois State Fire Marshal, which has been called to assist. We have engaged the fire marshal, but they won't be there until Thursday, from what I'm told, Kalal said. Flames could be seen coming from the first and second floors of the home on multiple sides of the structure when firefighters arrived. While an initial interior attack on the first floor was successful, firefighters were unable to reach the second floor from inside because the stairs were burnt out, which required them to fight the blaze from the outside using ground ladders and the Paxton Fire Protection District's ladder truck. Despite their efforts, the fire eventually burned through the home's roof, causing its collapse. In addition to Gibson City and Paxton firefighters, also responding were those from Elliott, Sibley, and Roberts Melvin. Combined, they brought 11 fire trucks to the scene. They fought the blaze in temperatures hovering just above 0 degrees. Kalal said firefighters took turns fighting the fire and warming themselves inside vehicles or at the fire station. There were some freezing issues as well, Kalal said. We definitely had some things freeze, but it didn't hinder the extinguishing of the fire to a point it was an issue. Living at the home were Ashley and Derek Latham and their family. Donations of clothing and cash to help the family are being accepted. A fundraiser for the family was launched Monday at GoFundMe.com. Meanwhile, the city noted in a message to residents on its Facebook page Monday that the city's water supply was affected due to the amount that was pulled to extinguish the fire. Most residents will be experiencing rusty or discolored water for a short time, the city's Facebook post said. We ask that if you are experiencing this, please run your cold water until it clears. Your water should return to normal shortly. We appreciate your cooperation. Also on the front page, stormwater drainage project in southeast Paxton. $8.1 million question. How will Paxton fund to fix flooding? City plans to apply for IEPA loan, seeks grants to pay for project. Paxton. Residents plagued by stormwater drainage issues in the southeast corner of town should expect some relief within the next couple of years if the city can find a way to pay for the several million dollars in recommended work. During its monthly meeting on Tuesday, January 14th, Paxton City Council made plans to approve moving forward next month with the submittal of a funding nomination form the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency for a proposed drainage improvement project for southeast Paxton. A revised concept and cost estimate for the long-anticipated project was reviewed by aldermen last week, revealing an estimated cost of $7.35 million in today's dollars and a projected cost of $8.1 million in 2026 or 2027 dollars, with all construction and engineering costs included. The project is expected to be completed in 2026 or 2027 if the city can secure the necessary funding via grants and/or low-interest loans, including potentially an IEPA loan through the State Revolving Fund, the SRF, or grants pursued with the help of state lawmakers from the area. Alderman Rob Pacey said the project might even qualify for federal hazard mitigation funding because of the property damage caused by repeated flooding. Flood mitigation project involves the construction of 11,513 feet of new, larger diameter storm sewer pipe in the southeast area of town, among other work, but no retention basins or wetlands areas as earlier considered, said Michael Livermore, a business development manager for the Clark Dietz engineering firm of Champaign. The design addresses current drainage issues along Summer Street, Meridian Terrace, Park Lawn, Fall Street from Patton Street to the Park District Swimming Pool, as well as Eastview Drive, along with the section of land owned by the Park District behind Eastview Drive on the south side, Livermore said. Livermore recommended the city proceed with the completion and submittal of an SRF loan application in coming months, along with final design plans and specifications. The next annual deadline for submission of final plans and specifications for SRF loans is March 31, 2026, Livermore said. To meet that deadline, a funding nomination form would need to be submitted to the IEPA by the end of this March, with tentative project plans submitted by July 31, 2025. The decision as to whether to move forward with the project would not be made by the SRF program until July of 2026, Livermore said. With the council's authorization in February, Livermore said his firm would have no problem meeting the March 31st deadline for funding nomination form submittal, which he said should take more than 2 to 3 weeks. The next step, if the council did decide to proceed, would be to go into complete full project design plans and specifications, as well as to move forward with the application for project financing through the Illinois EPA loan program and/or exploring other funding resources, Livermore said. We would put a funding nomination form into the state SRF program, and they would start to evaluate the project. The program is very competitive. Over the last 2 years, they have been very motivated to fund more wastewater projects versus stormwater projects. That being said, there is a portion of the program each year that is put in place for stormwater projects, and it is very competitive. So would we want be able to provide the state as complete a picture of the project, the needs to the citizens, and the commitment of the city itself to the program, so that they would score us very highly as part of the application. Livermore said the percentage of a project that an SRF loan can fund is variable. I think we could put together a strong argument together that they would cover the majority of the cost through a loan, Livermore said. If the city decides to proceed with the project, there would be design engineering costs of about $516,000 through March 2026, Livermore said. The design fee for getting the plans and specifications done would not be a repeatable cost, Livermore noted. In the event the city's initial SRF loan application were to be denied, and the city later reapplies for a loan, then it's just a matter of negligible cost each year updating the funding application. Pacey noted that an SRF loan is only one of several potential sources of funding. Another potential source might be hazard mitigation funds made available through the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We have looked at, or have begun to look at, this as a hazard mitigation project, potentially, Pacey said. I'm not going to speak to what FEMA may or may not have available, but obviously we're talking about flooding and property damage consistently through a large portion of town. Livermore said other grants may very well be available too, possibly even through congressional earmarks or the state budget. There are grant opportunities out there, Livermore said. There are avenues, perhaps, working with state representatives and state senators, where we might be able to get some additional consideration for funding based on any information they would have as to the priorities in the coming year. Clark Dietz's revised cost estimate for the project is up from a rough cost of $6.3 million, as estimated by the firm last year. In 2023, the Champaign-based Farnsworth Group proposed a different funding mitigation project involving the proposed construction of a wetlands area at the Cody Park and two dry retention basins behind homes on the west side of Meridian Terrace at an estimated cost of $7.1 million. Construction costs have escalated from the original report provided to the council in 2023 by Farnsworth, Livermore said. We adjusted those construction costs to current pricing of today. For planning purposes, it would be our recommendation, noting that this project would not likely occur until 2026 or 27, that an additional 20% cost escalation contingency be included in the planning, which would raise the cost to approximately $8.1 million in 26 or 27 dollars. Livermore said the proposed new drainage system should not create any problems downstream from where it outlets to the south via a ditch at Stockholm Road. Livermore said the Stockholm Road outlet was simulated with 100-year rainfall to determine whether the project would exceed capacity of the ditch or cause flooding downstream, and the study showed the project would increase the 100-year park elevations in the ditch by only 0.1, 0.2 feet. Our evaluation noted that the Stockholm ditch has enough capacity to handle the flow from the new drainage system if enacted, Livermore said. Also, that additional flow even further downstream will have a negligible effect to no effect upon the Big Four drainage system as a whole. We also examined whether there was potential flooding or possibly occurring at the city's wastewater treatment plant or by the veterinary clinic along Dump Road, and no issues are anticipated if a new drainage system is in place and that flow is put into the Stockholm Road ditch. Also on the front page, and from the City Paxton City Council, gunsmithing business okayed to operate out of Paxton Home. Special use permit for home-based gun repair business approved. Paxton. The Paxton City Council unanimously approved a special use permit to allow for a home-based gunsmith business at 838 East Orleans Street during its monthly meeting on Tuesday, January 14th. The permit, requested by Julian Geiken, was recommended for approval earlier in the night by the City's Planning and Zoning Commission following a public hearing. While the agenda for both the hearing and council meeting said the business would provide gunsmithing and related sales and services, Alderman Kristen Larson said that Geiken clarified during the hearing that sales would not be involved. This is not sales. This is simply repair, Larson said. Mr. Geiken clarified that he has no intention of sales. Abstaining from the council's 6-0 vote to approve the permit was Alderman Dean Geiken, the petitioner's father. Absent was Alderman Matt Greenberg. City Attorney Tony Schuring said the commission recommended approval after hearing from the younger Geiken during the hearing and considering factors applicable under city code. Schuring said the special use permit allows Geiken, but no one else, to run a gunsmithing business at the property as compared with a variance that runs with the land regardless of who owns it. Mayor Bill Engel noted that all neighbors whose properties are within 250 feet of the petitioner's property were notified as required by law and nobody in the neighborhood complained or had any problems with it. A woman in the audience, who did not state her name, told the council that she had some concerns, though. To me, this sounds like it could invite illegal gun owners, because now you can make a gun by looking online and getting the directions and making the parts, she said. I could see someone using a place like this to help them make guns, and I just see it as a very negative thing, and it saddens me. Another member of the audience, a man who did not state his name, responded by noting that gunsmithing and gun manufacturing are two different things, requiring two different licenses. Schering said he doubts the petitioner would be engaging in illegal gun manufacturing. I don't imagine that he's going to risk his livelihood by helping someone manufacture a ghost gun or something like that, Schering said. I understand your concerns. But the Planning and Zoning Commission considered all the testimony it received in making this recommendation. And I think we did ask specific, I think fairly pointed questions of Mr. Gieken about what exactly was going to be done there. I understand your concern, and I think the City Council does too. But the recommendation that was proposed and is time for the Alderman to consider. The unnamed male audience member who spoke earlier then asked Julian Gieken what he would do if someone were to come to his home and ask to have him repair a gun with a filed-off serial number. Kick them right out and probably report them to the police, Julian Gieken responded. Also at the meeting, the council unanimously approved an ordinance amending Chapter 51 of the city's Code of Ordinances to allow for additional collection methods for delinquent bills owed to the city. Schering said the changes include some rewording of existing language in the ordinance and some additional language clarifying the city's right to file suit against any person who has a delinquent bill. When it comes to water and sewer bills for tenants of rental properties, for example, the city could choose to file suit against the tenant in addition to filing a lien against the property. What this is intended to do is clarify that a debt itself is not necessarily tied to a specific property, Schering said. It is tied to a specific user. Because I think we were having some scenarios where we'd have people run up a past due bill at one property and move and get service elsewhere, and for whatever reason, that wasn't being noted that they had this past due amount at this prior property. This expands our authority and clarifies that we have the ability to go after people, not just properties. Now we'll turn to the back page of the first section of today's Ford County Chronicle with an article celebrating a significant anniversary. Gibson Area Food Pantry's 10-year anniversary. A decade of difference. Donations always needed to keep pantry going another 10 years. Gibson City. The Gibson Area Food Pantry, which recently celebrated its 10th anniversary of serving the community, is in need of financial donations as costs to operate the pantry continue to rise. As with food pantries across the country, we're feeling a financial pinch at this time. Costs are rising and supply chain shortages are making it difficult to secure staple items, said Mark Allemand, the food pantry's vice chairman. At the end of December, the food pantry, located in the GAH Elite Building in Gibson City, marked its 10th year of distributing food in the community. In alliance with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, Pantry was started by 8 local churches to serve those in need in Gibson City and surrounding communities. Our pantry has been exceptionally blessed in that we've been able to serve everyone in need without strict qualifying requirements, make deliveries to shut-ins, and supply food backpacks to GCMS students, also made available through local libraries during the summer months, Allman said. Over the past 10 years, Food Pantry has seen 29,100 hours worked by its volunteers, with 31,100 households fed, representing 85,000 individuals, and 708,000 meals served. The operation of the pantry is made possible through the unwavering volunteer and financial support of area churches, businesses, and individual donors, Alleman said. We have been so blessed over the past decade, a reflection of what a caring community we have in Gibson City. However, just as our personal pocketbooks have been impacted by higher prices, our food costs at the pantry have increased significantly over the past several months. As we begin a new decade of serving the community, please consider making a donation to the pantry. People can make a donation to the food pantry online at https://donate.gibsoncityhospital.org/campaigns/Gibson Area Food Pantry, or by mailing a check to Gibson Area Food Pantry at the hospital, P.O. Box 324, Gibson City, 60936. Please help us to continue serving our community in this important and much-needed ministry, Alleman said. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 22nd. Tanner M. Adkins, Buckley. Tanner Michael Adkins, 22, of Buckley, died Monday, January 13th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25th at the Paxton Church of Christ on the Ottawa Road in Paxton, with the Reverend Dave Hohulan officiating. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25th at the church. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Vera N. Carter, Penfield. Vera Nadine Carter, 81, of Penfield, mother of a Loder resident, died Saturday, January 11th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private family services will be held at a later date. Joanne Cotton, Gibson City. A celebration of life service for Joanne Cotton, 77, who died Wednesday, November 6, 2024, at her home in Gibson City, is scheduled for noon, Saturday, January 25th, at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in East Rantoul. Memorial contributions may be made to Northern Illinois University Winter Nursing Scholarship Fund. Margaret Hilgendorf, Paxton. Margaret L. Hilgendorf, 93, of Paxton, died at 1:35 a.m. Friday, January 17th, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. A memorial service was held at 11 a.m. Friday, January 24th, at the Lodi United Methodist Church, with the Reverend Timothy Delaney officiating. Burial followed in Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Memorials may be made to the Loda United Methodist Church or an organization of the donor's choice. Judy K. Ingold, Gibson City. Judy K. Ingold, 71, of Gifford, formerly of Rantoul and Gibson City, died at 9:24 p.m. Friday, January 17th, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, January 26th, at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, January 27th, at the funeral home, with the Reverend John Callahan officiating. Burial will take place in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the family. Roy E. Knox, Fisher. Roy E. Knox, 97, of Fisher, died Sunday, January 19th at the Gibson Area Hospital Annex in Gibson City, where he had been resident for 2 years. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25th at the Dewey Community Church in Dewey, with the Reverend Neil Hauser officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25th at the church. Burial will be at East Bend Memorial Gardens in rural Fisher. Donation in his memory may be made to the Dewey Community Church. Laverne Lahr, Fuslin. Laverne Bossingham Lahr, 106, of Fuslin, died at 7:52 p.m. Thursday, January 16th, at the ARC Nursing Home in El Paso. Her funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 25th, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, preceded by a visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. A graveside service will follow at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials may be made to the McLean County Genealogical Society. Patsy M. Reynolds, Piper City. Patsy M. Reynolds, 79, of Piper City, died peacefully at 8 a.m. Tuesday, January 15th, at the Gibson Area Hospital Annex in Gibson City, surrounded by her family. Funeral services were held at noon, Friday, January 24th, at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. Burial followed at the Drummer Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson Area Hospital Annex. Gale E. Reck, not spelt R-U-E-C-K, Gibson City. Gale E. Reck, 61, of rural Gibson City, died at 5:29 a.m. Saturday, January 11th, in Gibson City. A celebration of his life will be held in the spring. Mary Stoteley, and that's spelt S-T-O-L-T-E-Y, Rantoul. Mary Celestie Stoteley, 96, of Rantoul, formerly of Bales Lake in rural Loda, died at 7:34 a.m., Tuesday, January 14th, at the Villas of Hollybrook in Rantoul. A graveside service will be held at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City at a later date. Michael T. Surratt, and that is spelled S-U-R-R-A-T-T, Paxton. Michael P. Surratt, 62, of Paxton, died at 3:50 a.m., Tuesday, January 14th, at his home. There will be no services at this time. Robert Dale Uden, Hoopston. Robert Dale Bob Uden, 77, of Hoopston, a graduate of Rankin High School, died at 4:40 a.m., Sunday, January 5th, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. According to his wishes, cremation rites were arranged, and a celebration of his life will be held at a later date. Evelyn M. Zehr, and that's spelt Z-E-H-R, Fisher. Evelyn M. Zehr, 98, of Fisher, died peacefully at 1:35 p.m. Monday, January 13th, at Goldwater Care Nursing Home in Gibson City. A celebration of life service was held Thursday, January 16th, at the Fisher Community Building in Fisher, followed with the Reverend Joyce Gibson officiating. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.